Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The rising acceptance of CBD, that's the chemical found in cannabis, despite ongoing questions about its legality. CBD has quickly entered the mainstream, and although sellers cannot claim any medical benefits, many users swear by it as they treat their own health issues, as far-ranging as epilepsy and chronic pain. Meanwhile, North Carolina is on the verge of experiencing the CBD source plant hemp as a cash crop. But there are still challenges, especially for growers, and we're going to hear about them in the first part of the program. Rhiannon Fionn is editor and publisher of Carolina Cannabis News. She has turned her attention from coal ash, where as a reporter, she used to be called the coal ash queen because of her decade of reporting on that topic. She was here several times about that in the past. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Blake Butler is here, is joining us by phone. He is executive director of the North Carolina Industrial Hemp Association and co-founder of a company called HempX. He's been involved in the political and business aspects of hemp since 2014, both as an activist and a planter of hemp for fiber and for CBD. Welcome to you, Blake.
Thanks so much for having me.
So CBD comes from hemp. Last year, President Trump signed a bill that removed hemp and hemp-related CBD from the list of controlled substances that made it illegal, and yet both CBD and hemp still face challenges. Rhiannon, why?
Well, I think it's because of almost 100 years of fear-mongering. If you look back in history, and I've all of a sudden become a student of cannabis, prohibition isn't based in science, it's based in politics. And really, where we are right now is because of the Nixon administration slapping back against anti-war protesters, really. I mean, that's how Schedule I came about. And it was really about marijuana at the time. He actually commissioned a pretty conservative group of people, the Schaefer Commission, to look into cannabis and whether or not it should be prohibited or not. And to his surprise, they came back and said, no, it shouldn't be prohibited. And it remained on Schedule I anyway.
So when you say cannabis, people immediately think marijuana, not hemp. And CBD comes from hemp, and it is cannabis.
It's confusing.
Right?
So I've been explaining this like I explain the tomatoes in my garden. So I'm an organic gardener, and I have multiple types of tomatoes that I grow in my garden. I have cherry tomatoes. I have what we call the big uglies. We have all kinds. And it's kind of the same thing. They're all tomatoes. They're all from a tomato plant, but they're different types of tomatoes. And that's kind of what's going on with the cannabis plant. It's the cannabis plant, and you can either have, there's a spectrum of cannabinoids.
It either has the THC. THC, or it doesn't.
Well, that's not true, really. I mean, there's actually, people say over 100, but there are researchers in Europe who have found even more. There's hundreds of different types of cannabinoids, and we really only talk about two, THC and CBD. And that's in part because, people seem to want the high THC because of, they want the high, or they want the high CBD because they want, medical benefits. But research is kind of showing that there's, on that spectrum, you want something in between, and we have all these other cannabinoids that we're not even talking about.
And this prohibition that you talked about, dating back to the Nixon administration, actually predates that.
Oh, yes.
Because the marijuana and TCP used to be prescribed by doctors.
That is correct.
For conditions.
And in the 30s, the American Medical Association sent letters to Congress asking them not to prohibit this plant.
Right.
If you look back in history, at the time we were going through another, kind of quote-unquote immigration crisis from Mexico, and the word marijuana was really used in a way, kind of race-baiting, so to speak. And then it was, the jazz artists are, which is, again, a way to say the black guys are using cannabis. And so for a long time, this was something that was used by you know, people of color, minorities. It wasn't something that, you know, higher class folks were using or white folks were using. They were more into opium and hashish.
So there was a clampdown on it earlier and then again in the Nixon administration. But
Correct.
There was also a clampdown on hemp. Hemp, and I'm going to talk about this later, but hemp is an extremely versatile product. And maybe because of its versatility, it too was clamped down on because people had economic interests in other things, like trees to make paper. Hemp can be used to make
tobacco.
Paper. Tobacco,
yeah.
Etc. So maybe other interests clamped down on it too because they had money, investments, and other things. But Blake, could part of that also be, up until recently, have we been able to easily tell the difference between the plant that you grow just for CBD and for fiber, the hemp, and the plant that you grow to get a high? Was it easy to tell the difference?
It's all how it starts out, in the seed or the clone. And the Farm Bill specifically says when something is derived from the cannabis plant that's 0.3% less THC, it is now classified as an agricultural commodity.
But has it always been easy to classify it scientifically?
Well, no, not at all. And, if I could go backwards a little bit just to add what really happened with hemp, and Rihanna is exactly right. Most of the propaganda war on marijuana was run by churches. The movie Reefer Madness was produced by a religious group. So what really happened in all this is the DuPont family and the Hearst family and others came to Congress and said, we need to make the other side of the cannabis family a Schedule I drug because we want to make paper out of trees.
Right.
We want to use petrochemicals. So this was more about taking the power away from the individual farmer. Because remember, in the late 30s, early 40s, our government was asking the farmers in Kentucky and North Carolina to grow hemp.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned investment and political interest, because DuPont had developed nylon.
Mm-hmm.
You can make fiber, thin fiber, to make stockings
right.
out of hemp.
Yep.
They had nylon, and they wanted to make sure nylon won the race. Speaking of
that's
races,
right.
we're close to being a cash crop with hemp in North Carolina, and I'm wondering how we got so far so fast and how our production levels in this state compare with other states who are growing this, because evidently this is one of the perfect places to grow high quality hemp.
Yes, for sure. I mean, our farmers are learning that it's almost in their DNA from the old tobacco days. Very similar. If you're planting for CBD, you're going to plant, you're going to harvest, you're going to dry that, and then you're going to take it to a processor. So we do see an explosive growth right now in North Carolina, but I can tell you the long game and sustainability for hemp in our state is more about fiber and grain.
Yeah, but as
CBD
go ahead.
Is exploding right now and is part of the hemp fever that everyone is going through, and it's very valuable. But at the same time, there's still a need to tap into what was present in North Carolina, textile mills, educational training, agricultural training when it comes to hemp. And we have this infrastructure that we could tap back into. We just need capital, and we really need people to believe. That's the thing, to believe that the fiber and grain, the 3 to 5, the 7-year plan can bring back the smallest towns and the communities that need it the most.
So
because remember, as hemp and CBD now being categorized as an agricultural commodity, I think CBD will fall into an 80-20 basket like corn. So 80% of it will just be regular old CBD, and 20% of it will be specialized, clean, kind of like your non-GMO corn, your organic corn. I believe that's what we're heading towards with CBD.
So
a lot of people are really starting to look at how can they make an extract that makes a difference.
So I mentioned,
so
I think that's
where we're heading.
Stop, take a breath. So I mentioned that hemp is a remarkably versatile crop. You can make all kinds of things out of it, fabric, paper, plastics. It is a biofuel. It is a food source. I'm not sure what you would eat.
Hemp seeds, hemp oil, hemp seed oil.
There's nutritional value to it.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff's been around for some time. Okay. Unfortunately, we've been having to import it from like China and things like that.
You can also make concrete-like blocks for construction out of hemp. And there is a video on YouTube, an old, old, old film, where somebody made an entire automobile that runs.
Somebody named Henry Ford.
Out of hemp.
Yeah.
Right.
And actually, Porsche has recently done something similar. And, you know, it is. It's a totally versatile plant. There's no real reason why we shouldn't be making good use of it. One of the ways, you mentioned my past work in coal, I used to run into hemp in that work too, because it can also be used for environmental remediation, including with these old tobacco farms that used arsenic-laden pesticides. To become organic, these fields would need to be planted with hemp probably for a good 3 years, but that it'll remediate the soil and actually pull heavy metals and other contaminants out of the soil.
Can you then use the hemp that's pulling the heavy metals out of
the soil?
Sure,
you can put it into the concrete.
Not dangerous? Okay.
You could put, I wouldn't ingest it, but you could put it into concrete, plastics, paper, sure.
This is a miracle crop. Would that be too...
I was talking to Representative John Anger last night from up in Asheville, and he was acknowledging, we actually put a video up of him on our Facebook page, he was acknowledging that there's been a lot of hemp hype and that it's kind of hard to buy into it because it does seem so miraculous. In fact, we were at a processing facility called Hemp Magic, and it does seem a little bit miraculous. But when you start reading into it, all of these things are possible. And so when I talk to other people in the hemp industry, you know, they say it's hard not to be angry at the government for keeping this from us, but at the same time, they're glad that they can access it now.
So it does have a duplicate, many uses. It has the non-CBD uses, and it has uses for CBD. The growers in North Carolina, Blake, do they care which kind of a product they grow or where the product goes and how it's used?
Definitely. I mean, I think that's anyone that calls me as a first-time grower, I encourage them to get a plan in place like any other business. You got to have a plan. And then to kind of touch on what Rihanna was saying earlier, I kind of flip the script on them and I say, look, we're the Heirloom Tomato Growers Association in a sense that you need to find a buyer for three-fourths of your crop. Mm-hmm. You really do. You need to go out there and, you know, find someone to buy and work with you and help. You know, we've learned that our farmers are helping each other, sharing best practices. We're all new at this, so it's a very collaborative spirit across the state. We see a lot of small-scale farms out west, as Rihanna knows, 2 to 5 acres that are joining together to meet contracts, and then a lot of large farms out east, former tobacco farms and others that can grow 25, 50 acres. But it's about being realistic. And you can always scale up.
So let's talk about the CBD. Let's talk about the CBD aspect of this, because suddenly, all over Charlotte, there are these dispensaries cropping up, and I'm sure this is a phenomenon that's happening all over the country. These dispensaries have what they call bud bars. They have big jars of filled with this stuff that looks very much like marijuana.
Well, again, it's the same plant. You know, same plant, different makeup.
So. Without smoking it and realizing you're not getting high, or without baking it into a brownie, eating the brownie and realizing you're not getting high, how can you tell the difference? How can law enforcement tell the difference?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's been an actual problem. We've had, in fact, there's a case down in Florida right now where they, you know, confiscated a bunch of hemp from Gold CBD. And it is. It smells the same. It looks the same. It smokes the same. But again, you know, you're not going to get high off of a hemp flower, a smoking
right.
hemp flower. But if you have anxiety, you might experience immediate anxiety relief. So, I mean, that would be one way to tell. But other than that,
And what everybody needs to look towards is every dispensary, every retail operation should have a COA. And that is that certificate of authenticity, of compliance, that flower, we call it flower, not bud, CBD flower, was tested.
All right, and we'll come back and talk more about that in just a moment with Blake Butler from the Hemp Association and Rihanna Fionn in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about hemp and CBD and the proliferation of both in North Carolina. We've become one of the leading states for the growing of the hemp plant, particularly the one that does not have a lot of THC in it, which is the marijuana plant that gives you the high. CBD does not. Rihanna Fione writes about this. She's the editor and publisher of Carolina Cannabis News. Blake Butler joins us by phone from Asheville. He's the executive director of the North Carolina Industrial Hemp Association. CBD is gaining popularity here and around the country. I alluded to those dispensaries that have bud bars here in Charlotte. And on WFAE, our Nick DeLocq Canal says that at least six new CBD stores have opened here in just the last year, and other restaurants and stores have begun incorporating CBD into their menus, but all of them are operating in kind of a gray legal area. Why?
Well, for one thing, there's a difference between full spectrum and isolate, and Blake might be able to speak to this a little bit better. In talking with some attorneys like Rod Kite up in Asheville, what he was saying is that, you know, humans have been using cannabis for a very, very long time. So when you're using the full spectrum products, that's something that the government's going to have a really difficult time.
Full spectrum products are the ones that have the THC in it?
No, not necessarily. They're just not isolated.
I'm completely confused.
So like
it's naturally occurring CBD in a full spectrum product. It's naturally occurring CBD after you extract it from the flower.
All right, so CBD. What is the magic there? Because the FDA says, except in one case, they said that they're worried that the use of CBD to treat medical conditions could keep patients from accessing more, quote, appropriate recognized treatments. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, they have approved a drug derived from CBD oil to treat seizures in two rare forms of epilepsy. So does it? Or does it not?
So there again,
medicinal property.
You're talking about a CBD isolate where they've taken away everything but that CBD molecule.
Okay.
If when you are you're looking at the full spectrum, you're not only looking at CBD, but CBDG, CBD, A, you know, THCV, which is like an in-between between THC and CBD. I mean, it does get really, really complicated. And again, we tend to only talk about two cannabinoids. But what we're not talking about is our endocannabinoid system and our body. In fact, we even ran a story that was basically like the endocannabinoid system. You have one, just like you have a respiratory system and a skeletal system. We have an endocannabinoid system that we basically have been ignoring, and our body actually makes cannabinoids, but we don't always make enough. And so that's when you supplement with the CBD. But at the same time, there's just such a lack of information out there. It's hard to know how much you need and what type you should take.
Well, so as we pointed out, prior to prohibition, this plant was grown openly, and people used it, and doctors prescribed marijuana.
Our founding fathers insisted farmers grow it, and
right.
That was in Britain, India, all over the world.
And so there are all these different varieties of this CBD that comes out, and people have been using it for medicinal purposes, home remedies to treat all kinds of ailments, and it seems to work. So I'm curious, Blake, why there's been, or maybe there has been, and they've suppressed it, why has there been no scientific research that says, yes, this does, in fact, have an impact on whatever condition you're using it for?
Because it's been a Schedule I drug till December, and that's the difference. Because all the FDA has done to this point is state a position. They've never enforced it. So they got to get back together in February and restate their position. We've already had two senators write a letter to them. As you know, no one's home at the FDA or the USDA right now because of the government shutdown. But what they've said is your position before needs to change because now we're growing hemp inside the U.S. Just so everyone understands, we've been ingesting $600 million worth of hemp products each year in the U.S., and all the hemp is coming from China and Canada. So FDA inspectors have been flying to China and inspecting these factories once a year to be sure they're safe to bring hemp into our country. So I don't know why the FDA would put up any additional roadblock for inspection or anything else when we've opened this opportunity up to our farmers.
And I remember talking, I think, to Kelly Alexander about this about it 2 or 3 years ago, that because it was a Schedule I drug, you had to get all of your supply, if you wanted to do any testing on it at all, from one particular location that the FDA controlled. Otherwise, you couldn't grow
talking
it.
Talking about in Mississippi?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Where they, honestly, if you look at their farming practices there, they're subpar. That's just such a...
So
it's so crappy that that was our source for the long time when we have farmers doing a better job.
So help me understand this. All the stuff that we're using now comes in from China. Now that we're growing
it, Canada,
and now that we're growing it here, we have farmers here and all over the country growing this hemp now legally.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still, if I don't misunderstand this, it is still illegal for consumers to for this stuff to cross state lines. And for consumers to
That's
buy
their
it.
That's position, but they've never enforced
but
it.
But you can buy it on the internet.
Right.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, again, know that, you know, the Senate overwhelmingly passed it. There is plenty of people in the FDA's and the USDA's ear right now, and they're going to have to get together as soon as they get back to D.C. and figure this out, because the USDA has jurisdiction now over hemp and CBD.
Mm-hmm.
So the FDA is going to figure out what is our role. What's our play now that it's an agricultural commodity? Because it really does change everything. Every opinion they formed before was based on it was a Schedule I drug federally.
Okay.
So everything will change.
Because of this murkiness in the law, it's been very difficult for a lot of distributors of CBD products and also the growers of hemp to get financing and to be able to use banks. Some banks refuse to let you have an account with
them.
Oh,
they'll shut them down. They'll let them start an account. They'll even call it high risk and charge them extra fees.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll be in the middle of a transaction and all of a sudden they can't.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because Venmo, PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay, other electronic methods they've stopped it.
Yeah.
They won't let you use them.
Often with no warning.
So is that because of concerns surrounding legality and which way the government might come down on this on any given day, or is it some lingering stigma from the past?
A little bit of both, I think. We've interviewed some people from the NC Banking Commission about this. So now that we have the Farm Bill, what they're saying is expect changes on this front. Expect this change. Expect to have crop insurance soon. But they need to let their lawyers kind of go through the bill, and they expect that to take many months before banking practices open up.
She just said crop insurance, and I know that during, I think it was the latest hurricanes,
Florence,
a lot of farmers lost their crops, and among those crops were hemp growers, and they did not have crop insurance because you can't get it, so they lost their entire crop. What kind of an impact has that had on the industry here, Blake?
Well, I definitely... you know, there was a few farmers that lost most of their harvest. And I think that, you know, like I said before, it puts you in a realistic position. Or did I go too big? Should I scale back? And should I reapproach it with a security blanket, which is crop insurance? And, you know, the Farm Bill allows for that. And we have insurance companies joining our association every day.
What is the size?
They're starting to engage. They want to help our growers and our farmers. And the banking industry here in North Carolina is opening up, too. The banks are being much more friendly after the passage of the Farm Bill.
What is the size of the hemp growing industry in North Carolina? How many farms or farmers are we talking about? How many acres have been planted with hemp?
Well, right now we have 585 growers that have been approved by the state, and we have over 2 million square feet of greenhouse space and indoor grows. So, you know, just again, so your listeners know, those indoor grows and greenhouses, those are for CBD. So you're going to plant, you know, indoors for CBD. So that's real significant, because in a greenhouse or an indoor grow, you can harvest 3 times a year.
So if you scaled this up to what tobacco used to be when everybody smoked, what would this mean to the economy of North Carolina? What would it mean to farmers in North Carolina who have lost a lot of productivity because the demand for tobacco has decreased, I would think, a lot since the 1950s? What would it mean?
Well, I think it would be very significant, because I have gone across the state and visited the Kingstons, the Goldsboros, the Pittsboros of the world, and they need a new agricultural community. Opportunity, a new agricultural commodity to bring these towns back to life. And as I mentioned before, if we really do envision what we had set up in the past, with tobacco and the Burley Tobacco Co-ops. It's about coming together and figuring out how to bring these places back to life with a new crop. And so we're trying to be very strategic, and I'm really charged with being sure no one goes out there too big, and you know, and I want everybody to be successful and sustainable, but I think we're going to have to, you know, once again, look at it from a statewide basis and who can do what. And I think that, like I said before, down east, we're seeing large grows start, and out west, we're seeing more greenhouses being put up. So I think at the end of this year, we'll have a totally different landscape across North Carolina as far as our hemp grows go.
I want to touch on CBD one more time, sure. Because these locations, these places you can go to buy CBD products are cropping up all over town. The FDA says because it has not been proven to be medicinally effective on anything except this two highly rare forms of epilepsy, you cannot market CBD as having medicinal products, but clearly people use it for that, and I'm told that retailers are suggesting that CBD.
I hope they're not, because they can get in a lot of trouble.
So I've read that they're suggesting that it will help with several conditions. We've talked about epilepsy, also chronic pain. Insomnia is said to be helped by CBD products. Is the proof merely anecdotal? Or do people take CBD products, and then whatever condition they're taking it for, that condition is relieved because, in fact, it is? Or is it the placebo effect?
At this point, it's really hard to say. It might be a little bit of both, but there is definitely a lot of research out there. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily coming from our country. You often have to look internationally for this research because of the prohibition that's been in place for so long.
And what other countries, aside from China, obviously, are involved?
Prague, Israel, France, Great Britain, a lot, many.
Is the same stigma attached to cannabinoid.
Cannabinoids, good job.
Is the same stigma attached to those products in those countries as it has been here?
I think to some degree, but to a much lesser degree. I think, here we have a special brand of fear-mongering going on. I mean, just yesterday or this week in South Carolina, you know, you had the police and medical association and even the attorney general coming out saying that, you know, cannabis is evil, basically. And that's just not true. That's just the old-fashioned fear-mongering a la reefer madness.
So this is one of those stories that will unfold over the next several months, and we'll keep coming back to it, I'm sure. And I want to also talk some more a little bit when we'll come back in future programs about what products are being made from hemp right now that we may not even understand. We don't have time to talk about it now, but we'll do it in future programs. Rhiannon Fionn, editor-publisher of Carolina Cannabis News. Blake Butler, executive director of the North Carolina Industrial Hemp Association. Thanks both for being here.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.